Welcome to 10 Bestest,
where we sift through the noise so you don't have to.
Each week we share our 10 favorite things of the moment.
Anything goes. Welcome everybody, my name is Brian Hart, and today we have a special guest, another Brian Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So this is going to be a fun show. We've been friends for quite a long time. First of all, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm the Brian of our group. Then you're Hart, and then there's Noel. We have a lot of Brians, but
there
I'm the Brian. I'm the Brian.
That's right.
And see, I'm a funeral director, which is one of the first things that people usually learn about me. I'm also a co-host of Real Film Snobs, which is a local CCTV show that we would do a film review, obviously. I'm a friend of the pod here. I'm a big fan, so this is really exciting to be on here. It's a different medium for me, just with my voice, because I know I sound like a tearing metal and a car alarm mixed. But I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and this will be cool. But, you talk about Real Film Snobs, so I've been on your show. I do a kind of a reoccurring segment when I go to Sundance. That didn't happen this year. So it's kind of cool to have you now on my show. So it's
right.
A little reverse role reversal here, but it's the Brian show.
So. You're the captain now.
Yeah, right. Yeah, buckle in. This is good. It's my revenge. No. No. So I'm looking forward to it. And I'm going to go first. And speaking of revenge, this is funny. I'm going to talk about my first cool sheet is a short film, and it is actually called Treevenge. And this was made in 2008, and it's directed by Jason Esner. And I first saw this at Sundance. So every once in a while, Sundance will play a short film before the feature. And since I work at the Egyptian on the midnight shift, and the midnight has the craziest movies, you know, this is where Blair Witch and all the most gory, crazy movies, this short film played before a feature. And it is definitely a midnight movie. So if you are squeamish, not so good. But it starts out very serene and this like kind of panning shots over forests of Christmas trees in the wild. And it's got this kind of eerie, but also kind of peaceful music. And then it all of a sudden hard cuts it to these loggers, you know, kind of one with a big cigar and one with a chainsaw and one with an axe, and they start chopping down all these Christmas trees. And it's really exaggerated, but kind of what it's doing to these trees and loading them up in the truck and then taking them to a Christmas tree lot. And the trees are like shaking and they start talking to each other. So it's subtitled of like, what's happening? They're taking us away from our home. And why are they taking our children? And everybody's scared. And then they get them into the house and they're like decorating them and throwing them all these ornaments and lights. And then on Christmas Day, the trees had it and they get the revenge. And the first one, as they're taking a picture while the little girl is unwrapping her Christmas present, and the tree grabs her and starts thrashing her, and it gets super bloody and gory, and the movie takes like this crazy, and it goes more and more and more. And I don't want to say anymore because you just got to watch it. If you can handle it, check out Treevenge. Nice.
Oh man, that, you know, I have a hard time with short films because they never can kind of, you know, they tell a full story. It's hard to do. They can do that in a short period of time, but sometimes it's a little too short. I'm a short attention span.
Sure.
ADHD. We'll get more into that later, a little bit later. But so you think shorter films would appeal to me. That sounds like a lot of fun, though.
It is. And it's so this one's 16 minutes for a short film is actually, you know, on the longish side for what usually Sundance does before a feature, especially. But yeah, and I forgot, I watched it again on my lunch hour today because it's been a while, but how much it ratchets up the craziness. I was
nice.
Like, oh, I forgot about that. And then I'm like, oh, that. Almost like, and I tell you, and this is like a lot of movies, the experience, I'll never forget the first time I saw it at that midnight audience. And one of my really good friends, Mark, was next to me. And Mark is this New Yorker who's awesome. And he was freaking out so bad. And he's a pretty tough critic with movies. And I remember him just screaming and laughing so loud. The whole theater was going crazy. So that just enhances the experience, of course. Remember when we used to go to the movie theater?
Yeah, no, I was saying nothing beats an audience because it can elevate any kind of movie, especially a comedy or a horror film.
Yes, exactly.
Those are so much better with a group than with just by yourself, because that's something that's a communal experience. That's something we're certainly missing right nowadays, certainly. So where can you find this?
So that's a good question. So this is on Venmo or Vimeo. Okay. Vimeo, sorry. And Venmo, that's where you can send me money if you want. No, so it's on Vimeo. It might be on YouTube as well, but that's a good point. You can go to our website, tempestus.com/tree, and that will take you to the show notes for this episode that'll give you a link right to that short film. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. But like I said, it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, I'll wait till
I do want to put a little bit of a warning for that, because some people might freak out.
Yeah, that's always fun when you recommend a film that scars somebody in a really bad way. And like, oh, I didn't tell you it was, it was bloody, didn't I? Oh, I didn't? Whoops. Okay, so we're going to move on to my first cool sheet. I'm very excited about this. So as I mentioned, I am a funeral director. So what I'm most excited about right now are Pearson Embalming Chemicals. I listen to this podcast, so I know how much chemistry can figure in. So I thought I would talk about some embalming fluid. I recently started a new funeral home, and they use Pearce. And so they gave me the option of changing things, but you don't do that to embalmers. So you just kind of keep with theirs, because embalming fluids like motor oil or religion. Everyone has their own, and everyone thinks theirs is the greatest, and that's fine. So in 1935, W.H. Bill Pearce and his wife moved to Dallas, Texas during the Depression to start a small funeral supply business known as Mortician Supply. Bill Pearce, a licensed funeral director and embalmer himself, knew what supplies the funeral homes needed. And so what he did was he just kind of figured out a concoction that he mixed. And during the week, he would go out into the other states, surrounding states, and visit funeral homes to sell his product. And on the weekends, he actually mixed the chemicals himself. He's become a very big, prominent figure in our industry. He even established the Dallas Institute of Funeral Service, a Pierce College, one of the first schools of embalming in the United States. My mentor, David Callender, who taught me everything, was a graduate as well as a Bill Pierce Award winner. I cut my teeth on Dodge Chemicals. Some people like Champion. There's all kinds of different ones. But with Pierce, what I really enjoyed was that they kind of thought about the director. And one of the things that they did was they have a scented fluid, which sounds kind of odd and strange, but when you've spent all day in an embalming room with that smells like feet fluid and your old coworker next to you, after a while you kind of have they have a cinnamon scented one. They also have a melon scented one, which is really kind of nice. They have a Triton fluid, which is a humectant, and it does a really nice job in terms of how firm you want to have the tissue to be, as well as Energize, which is a little bit more of a firmer tissue. And then their Care 25, which is their number one seller that they talk an awful lot about. And as soon as I mentioned to any of my embalmers that I worked with Pierce, they were like, Care 25, you got to get it. You got to get it. So we were really excited. It's already got dye mixed in with it, which is the way I prefer it. Don't make me mix dye, please. And it does a really nice job in terms of the firmness of the tissue that I would like to have, the coloring. And I just love the fact that they've got a fluid certainly for everything, as most chemical companies do. But I've really enjoyed working with them. And they're my cool sheet of the week.
Wow. Okay. This is why I love having guests on. This is nothing I would ever, I know nothing about. So first of all, gosh, I have so many questions. This is going to be a long episode.
Yeah.
Okay. First of all, tell people that I kind of know, but what does embalming fluid even do?
What embalming fluid does is it's a preservative. And so what I always say, to say it gently, is that it slows down the course of Mother Nature. All tissue, all things break down with time. And they're no longer living tissue. So it slows that down. It also will, depending on which one, will bring color back to the skin. You and I are very, 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 very pale.
Yes.
And so we would need some coloring. We would need some dye. We would need to have that. Now, if it was somebody that if I put on, a good 100 some odd pounds, I would have a lot of fatty tissue. And so I would need something with a higher index, which is a stronger fluid.
Wow.
That would be something like Energized here. And that would help firming of that tissue, because there'd be a lot of jiggly.
Yeah.
And so this would help that. Also, wow. If I was going to be transported somewhere else, you want to make sure that I'm nice and embalmed and there's not going to be any kind of issues there.
Yeah.
The core, that's an index cavity fluid, and that's pretty much for the cavity, and I'm going to leave it just at that. It's a very strong fluid. It's a straight up fluid, aside from this one, and it's a very strong, I mean, it'll knock you backwards. But so the cinnamon scented is really, really nice.
Yeah.
And I do have a director that I, a mommer that I worked with, and she was like, oh, for Christmas time, cinnamon. And I was like, okay, sure, Maddie, that's fine.
You got to have a little bit of humor when you're in that field.
Yeah,
I got to imagine.
So they have, I have a catalog. They have a little of something for everybody, and everyone kind of has their own preference of one of these and one of this. And I kind of you kind of experiment, and you kind of find that everyone has their formula that they use. One of this, one of this, one of that, whatever.
Yeah.
And you have water conditioners. There's ones that just help with if I were to pass. I have very big veins, depending on what I've passed from or what kind of medication I'm on, my blood might either be very thin, it might be very thick, it might coagulate, so there's clogging, so there's ones that help with that.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of everything. Second oldest industry in the world, don't ask me what the first one is. And so we literally have it down to a science.
Right.
It's sitting right here in front of me, and so we have a little something for everything that will help that. And you kind of do a case analysis before you start.
Yeah.
While you're doing it, you pay attention. And then afterwards, you've got to do that. And if you have difficult cases, cosmetics. There's always cosmetics. I'm very good with cosmetics. Thank goodness. I'm a good embalmer. I'm just fine. But my cosmetics are spot on. So anything that may not turn out the way I want it to be, I can use cosmetics.
Wow. That is just, that's so fascinating. How many different... You mentioned this is the Pierce brand, I guess. How many different kinds are there? I mean, is it tons?
There are a lot. Yeah, I mean, Dodge and Pierce, the ones I know of, there's ones that, I have people that just swear by Champion. Dodge I love because they were... For the funeral director out there, they had square bottles and they were so nice to put on the shelf and they fit nicely now around. So, but anyway, so you have Dodge, you have Pierce, you have Champion. There's Frigid that I've worked with before.
Frigid, funny.
And there's a few other ones, but those are pretty much the big ones that I know of. It was recently purchased by Wilbert, which doesn't mean anything to you, but in my industry, that was a big thing.
Wow.
And
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, well, they're pre-mixed, so there's no chemistry necessarily involved. So if Karen was here and she started grilling me, I'd be like, it's a bottle of this.
Yeah, right? She probably would know exactly what does what. And
yeah. I used to be able to tell you, but once you pass your exam,
you don't need to know that as much.
It just fizzles.
But you probably know, like you said, which one works for thicker veins or a bigger person or a different composition, skin tone. Yeah. You know, so that's like the practical information.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. There's cause of passing, how long it's been. There's a lot of different factors that go into what you're going to be using. So I know there's something I'm going to forget to mention about that, but. That's all good.
Well, if you remember, we can always come back to it. But that is fascinating. Thank you so much for sharing that. That is cool. I knew this was going to be great. Okay. My next cool sheet is, guess what? A movie. But I specifically picked this movie because actually we just hung out maybe a week ago or so. And we had this really great question about film. And so anyway, this film is one of my favorite films, but very difficult, Leaving Las Vegas. It was in 1995 by Mike Figgis. And so I'm sure just like you, Brian, you get this question all the time. What's your favorite movie or what's your top 10? And for me, I can never do it. I don't know if I just have commitment issues or if it's my mood. Certainly my tastes change. Also, it's really hard to compare something like Mighty Python and the Holy Grail versus The Godfather. They're totally different films, totally different situations. Again, it's depending on what you're in the mood for that day. But I've probably watched Holy Grail more technically than Godfather, just because you can watch a comedy over and over and over and over and over and just laugh. Anyway, but what we were talking about is what is one of your favorite movies that you never watch? And that is an easy answer for me, is definitely Leaving Las Vegas. I've seen it twice, and the second time I really had to talk to myself, do I want to watch this again? Do I need, I mean, I love the movie. I own it. I love it. It is one of the most powerful movies. It's very dark. If you don't know, it's Ben Sanderson, who's played by Nicolas Cage, who won a Best Acting Oscar for this role. He's a Hollywood screenwriter who lost everything because of his alcoholism. He goes to Las Vegas to drink himself to death. That is his mission. That's the first, it's not a spoiler, that's what he decides to do right in the off the bat. And then he falls in love with a prostitute played by Elizabeth Shue. Amazing. I love her. And so it's super dark. Everything about it's kind of horrific, but also mesmerizing and beautiful at the same weird way. Anyway, the film is Leaving Las Vegas.
Choo-choo. Yeah, so there are a lot of films that I absolutely love. Schindler's List.
Yeah.
I saw it in the theater once. I own it. Haven't watched it. Graveyard of the Fireflies, which wrecked me. Wrecked me. Can I love that movie. Could not watch it again. Leaving Las Vegas certainly is one of those other ones there. There are certain films that just set such an impression on you, but are such tough movies to kind of sit through.
Yeah.
It's Million Dollar Baby is another one.
Yeah.
I mean, those are just, they're so good, but they're so hard because now you know the emotional toll it's going to take on you watching it again.
Right.
Even though it's beautifully made, masterfully
done. It's almost worse the second time because you know what's coming.
Yeah, and Nicolas Cage is never better. He was absolutely fantastic. Elizabeth Shue, who I totally have a big-time crush on, and she's still someone I still have a crush on. She's absolutely fantastic. I wish she'd have got more roles like that.
Right.
But it's just one of those films. I mean, they're so good. You're like, it's an important film. I should own it. But I can watch Anchorman over and over, and I can quote that movie ad nauseum.
Yes.
Even though Schindler's List is a more important film, quote-unquote.
Absolutely.
Anchorman is the one I want to watch.
Yeah.
You know?
So, yeah, and I would say that I like Leaving Las Vegas better than Anchorman, but I will always pick Anchorman first.
Yeah, and there's those films that you own. They're important films. I'm like, I own it because I should, because I loved it, but I'm going to grab Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
Nothing against Thor Ragnarok. It's a brilliant film.
But it's just fun.
Yeah, when there's Citizen Kane, which in my opinion is my favorite film of all time, greatest film of all time, but I'm not always in the mood for that because I got to sit and watch that and sink it in, and it's a lot.
Yeah, there's no playing it in the background while you're cooking dinner or doing dishes or whatever. Like you could Thor Ragnarok, you know. It's just fun. And I remember this part, and I'll go stop for a second and watch it. And then I'd go do my thing.
Yeah.
You can't do that with these kind of movies.
No.
But I loved how we just came up with that idea. Because for me, for someone who is really hard at pinning a top 10 or a favorite of all time, but that one I can say for my favorite movie that I just can't watch.
Oh,
though.
Brian, I now have a new mission. We're going to put together your top 10.
Oh, gosh. Many
I put
have
that
tried.
Thing down, and I can rattle mine off verbatim because after a while, once it's easy, I have it in my phone because people ask me that all
now,
the time.
Now, does it change
it has,
a little bit?
Yeah. And see, that's the thing with my co-host, Angela. When she's like, it's written in stone. I'm like, no, it isn't. You can change it all the time.
Yeah,
the Searchers has crept into my top 10. Jaws has worked its way as it should have been. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But you can have it. It's a living list. It kind of move up and move down. I've always said that my favorite film of all time is either The Godfather or Citizen Kane, depending on which one I watched most recently.
Interesting.
And that's the easiest way to do it.
Yeah.
And then after that is Do the Right Thing because it's a perfect film.
Yeah.
So, and then Bringing Up Baby and then Love and Death. I mean, I could just go right down the line. I know all of them. So, it's just a matter of importance and also the how many times have you watched it and what film defined you and what film it's hard to do. But getting back to that movie though, it is an amazing film. I can tell you where I saw it. We're at Movie Land right down the street.
Yeah.
I remember getting out. I watched it with my friend Katie. We got into a car, sat down, total silence.
Right.
We were wrecked.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful film. I recommend watching it at least once.
Right.
And it is life affirming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
it's super real and raw and everything about it. And especially if you've known anybody in recovery or battling with alcoholism, it really hits, I think. And I think everybody knows somebody that's in that, even if it's just maybe spectrum or, you know, like it's so real. And it's certainly not a Hollywood movie with a happy bow and all those things that might, it's just, that's why I love it, and that's why I can't watch it.
Right in the middle of the 90s, right there with independent films, rocking it.
Yep.
And they were just, everyone was making these statements and hard to watch films that were just beautiful and magnificent.
And this one was like, hold my beer, take this.
Yeah.
Is this the movie that kind of like really catapulted Cage to superstardom. Yeah.
So he wins the Academy Award for this, and then all of a sudden they're like, hey, going $20 million a movie? And he makes a bunch of Bruckheimer films. I believe Con Air was next, which was laughable.
Right.
And then it was a few other ones. Golly, and I can't remember if The Rock was before that or after that, because The Rock was like, well, you know what, for an adventure film, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, but then it was like, oh, and another one, and Face Off. I'm like, okay, you can slide by and Face Off. I love Face Off.
There are movies like that.
And then after a while, it was like, oh, so this is all we're going to do now is just this. It can be the Johnny Depp situation where, like, you're playing the same character kind of over and over again, and now we're bored of you. Go back to indie films.
And now he's doing himself, being himself. Like, so it's almost kind of funny, but... sometimes not.
Worst yet is that Elizabeth Shue got to show the other side and really knocked it out. I think she made The Invisible Man, that wasn't called it, Hollow Man, after that.
Right.
And then because she's of a certain age in Hollywood, you know, if you're not old enough to be a mom and you're not young to be hot in your 20s, they don't know what to do with you. And then she lost out to the roles, probably to Meryl Streep or somebody else, where there's very few of, which is sad because she is an amazing actress. She was recently on Cobra Kai, and it just made my life.
She's having a little bit of a comeback, which I love.
Her smile just brightens any day.
She's in Cobra Kai. Yeah. She's still gorgeous. She's still awesome.
Knockout.
She's fabulous. Yeah. Yeah. She's really was underutilized for sure.
Yeah. Too bad. It was too bad.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll move on to my next cool sheet. As I mentioned before, I'm a funeral director, and I also mentioned that I have ADD. And so to make life interesting, and I was really surprised this wasn't a cool sheet yet, is the value of the valuable post-it note. In 1963, 3M researcher Spencer Silver was tasked with creating a better adhesive for the aerospace industry and failed. The adhesive was too weak and could be easily removed without leaving any residue. In 1974, Art Fry, a 3M researcher looking for a solution to keep his place in his hymnal book at church, had an aha moment and tried Silver's adhesive. Fry could only find yellow scraps of paper to experiment with, hence the post-it note was born, in keeping with the yellow paper. In 1977, the product was released and failed. It was called Press and Peel, and the disappointing sales were blamed on the fact that people didn't understand what it was. So in 1979, as a promotion, it was a hit in Boise, Idaho, of all places. Love Boise. It was given out to a lot of offices, and it became a hit. And then in 1980, the posters were sold nationally. Now, because of my ADHD, I use post-it notes in the kitchen to remind me what to put in my lunch, what I needed to do before I leave for work. I have post-its on my front door that remind me what to take to work, what to take when I walk the dog, what to take when I go to the gym, and reminders for the grocery store, because I get easily distracted, and there's nothing worse when I go to the gym and realize I do not have my gloves because I have very sensitive funeral director hands. My files at work have post-it notes on them for certain tasks. My desks have post-it notes for information that I need on a regular basis. I have plenty of to-do lists throughout the day, either at work or at home, that I write them on. And every room in my house has a pack of post-it notes, including my car. The rearview mirror is the best place for reminders. They come in many colors. And here's where it gets really weird, folks. When they come in many colors, so you can categorize your notes and what type of reminders that you need, because that is how I work. So post-it notes is my cool sheet.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. I love this.
I didn't bring any.
Darn it. But you know what I instantly visualized in my head? I don't even know how much they use them in the movie, but that movie poster for Office Space, where they, in fact, we have it right outside in the lobby here in the studio, where he's just covered in post-it notes. That's how I visualize your house now. It's just covered everywhere.
I have to do the different colors because they won't catch my eye. Certain ones won't catch my eye. The yellow ones, you can look
past.
Glaze
over them.
I have the shocking pink ones. You have the shocking ones. I mean, next to my coffee maker, it says, this is what you need to put in your lunch, Brian, because I'll, you know, in the morning, I'm like, what? Because I'm half awake.
Yeah.
I'm easily distracted. Yeah, I have them everywhere, and it just helps me keep on track and what I need to do. You know, I would be a post-it note that I had in my wallet that I told you about with the show and the different reminders of where our show is posted, because I can't remember those things. So normally that would be a post-it note, but that gets sticky in your wallet. And,
right.
I have to have those kind of things because there's my brain's working on something all the time. So when it comes to a regular thing that's needed, I just pulled out the note. It's the same thing. It's
yeah. I love it. What I love about that story, I've been familiar, not all the details, but I love how it was basically an accident that became such a big thing, but I didn't know that it was a failure at first.
Yeah.
So that's because no one was like, what is this? You know, it took a while. I was like, why would we want that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Press and Peel. I'm like,
Press and Peel is also
that's a terrible name.
That's a horrible name.
That's a terrible name.
Although, you know, like Post-it, now it's a great name because that's what we think of. We instantly know what that means. But yeah, Press and Peel, definitely bad. So,
yeah, I could not function without it. I would have long pieces of paper. Well, I guess people just use paper and tape, and that tape pulls things.
Yeah.
It takes off enamel, takes off paint. That would have been terrible. I guess I'd be using painter's tape, I guess. I don't know, but it would be, my world would just be, it would be hard.
Right.
You get them in all kinds of sizes. I have the little ones. I have the big. Oh, I love Post-it. I have to have the dispenser with the accordion.
Oh, yeah.
Because I grab them and I go to go quick. Yeah. Don't give me the, I got to pull it up. I hate that. Don't make me pull it apart.
And how much money, you know, did this accident make 3M? I mean, billions within the invention till now. Crazy.
Yeah. And by the way, it wasn't Romy or Michelle that invented that. That was a part of the movie plot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, another great cool sheet. Thank you so much. My next one, I think you're going to like this if you haven't checked it out already. This is a project, and it's called How Bad Is Your Spotify? So this was put together by Pudding, a website Pudding, which I've actually was a cool sheet way back in episode 41. So way back, I talked about this website Pudding. And just recently, they created a sophisticated AI that judges your awful taste in music. So when you go to this website, it scans your Spotify. So you log on and then it tells you. So, you know, each at the end of the year, so at time of recording, this is now February, Spotify always has like your year in review. And sometimes that's weird in itself, but it's AI, what you listen to the most. So this is kind of a play on that. And then it will tell you what, and as it's working, it's just like Spotify, you know, they're like, oh, really? Really? Do you really like Sophie Tucker? And like actually asked me, so I had to like check yes. And they're like, was this a joke? Like, were you being ironic or is this serious? And then you put yes or no. And then it goes, and then it categorizes you. So I forget what mine, I needed to screenshot it. But one example is your Spotify was 90s dorm room sweaty rave Ira Glass in your AirPods bad. So it comes with this very elaborate description of how bad you are and how bad your music. I don't think it ever says you're good. Although it will say it's like, oh, all right, well, you like Prince. At least you got something in there that's decent. And, but I just love, so it totally slams and makes fun of your music. And it's just a really cool kind of funny thing. You can and then send, once it roasts you, then you send it to all your friends. It can roast them, and it's just delightful. I love it. It is called How Bad Is Your Spotify?
I want that job. I want to judge people on their music taste. That sounds so
you could be
much
a live
fun.
Version of this.
Oh my gosh. I want to be part of the algorithm or whatever it is to help figure that out, because
and the snarky responses. Oh, I think you would be good at too.
You know, we're single and I've been single for a really long time, and it gets to be like a Seinfeld episode where a little thing like music taste can be like no.
Game over.
Yeah, game over. I'm walking. I'm out. And, you know, all you have is Celine Dion. You have her whole, you have every one of her albums. Wow. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. See you later. So that, oh my gosh. I would take that a little personally. I don't know if
yeah, because I don't think there's a good, I don't think it's ever nice.
Oh my
God. I think it's always, I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe if you have perfect taste according to the algorithm, but I have a feeling that it's very just snarky on purpose, which is why I think it's funny.
Well, you know, does it give recommendations? Like, well, you know, if you're listening to an awful lot of, you know, Britney Spears here, which is, you know, okay, or shady, would have been what they want to think about it. But, you know, you may want to try Cyndi Lauper or Madonna, or I'm sure you're probably already listening to them if you're listening to Britney Spears, but
right.
Does it give recommendations?
Yeah, well, it's funny because mine specifically said, there's a lot of pop in here. Which I don't normally think as myself as a big pop listener, but apparently I am.
Oh my gosh. We started working with a couple of friends, longtime friends, and we've kind of reconnected, and we're working through the Rolling Stone 500 Greatest Albums. And my friend had just only listened to pretty much Madonna, Whitney Houston, Celine Dion, and it was just like, and that's it, and Barbra Streisand or something. And it was like, so he just recently, through this list, has discovered Nirvana and Pearl Jam, and he texts me like, wow, these guys are really good.
I'm like, that's and you, so great.
You can't be mean, and you can't be judgy, but there's a part of me that just goes, oh my God, really?
Where have you been?
Nirvana was right there, you know, in our 20s. That was the right. band. Really? You never heard it? So it's, yeah.
So I just ran it again. So first thing it says, analyzing your listening history. LOL. OMG. Okay, hold up. And that's what it says. Do you really listen to Drinky by Sophie Tucker? Like, ironically?
Aww.
And it says, all right, cool.
Oh.
And then it keeps going, sing plenty of pop. So it is the exact same. Finding a lot of Max Richter, like a lot, which he's a former Cool Sheet. Oh boy, This Is America by Childish Gambino. Another great Pink Martini stan.
Jeez.
And then it says, you've been listening to, seriously, a lot of Max Richter lately. You okay?
Oh my God.
And I'm like, and it says, yeah, why? No reason. Of course, Queen. So it does mention my Queen, but it's like, yeah, of course you like Queen.
Oh, it meant the group. I thought it was calling you names. I was like,
yeah,
dang, okay, let's go. You want to throw shade?
And then it plays a game for you, a little F, Mary, Kill. So then you have to pick that, which is all people that I've listened to.
Oh, that's funny.
And then it judges you on who you kill.
So the lesson here is, kids, if you can put together a program that'll make fun of somebody and
Coachella.
Be productive, that sounds like a lot of fun. Someone made money off of this. Good for them.
Yeah. And then it says it feels slightly nauseated. Your Spotify was pretty good. Just kidding.
Yeah, mine would definitely be like, are you okay? Because it
Your
sounds
Spotify
like you need to talk
was
to somebody.
Bad. Request. Okay, so here it's going through. Your Spotify was Request, Bohemian Rhapsody at Weddings, Silent Generation, still streaming Old Town Road bad.
Jeez.
I love it. Flute infused R&B bad, ambient bad, escape room bad, boomer bad, 80s prom bad. But wait, it gets worse.
Oh, jeez.
You stan these artists to an uncomfortable extent. Max Richter, Sophie Tucker, Pink Martini, Queen. You are 28% basic. Which is, yeah, so bad. I'm stuck in the early 2010s. Oh, gosh. Yeah, pretty great.
Oh, my goodness.
So anyway, yeah, worth checking out.
That is rough. Dang. Okay, so then we'll move on to my next cool sheet here. My next cool sheet is a book. I was an audio. I listened to the audio book, but it's still, it was a book. It's M2WTF by Samantha Allen. Now, Samantha Allen is an award-winning journalist whose work has been published in the New York Times, CNN, Rolling Stone, and she has a PhD in women's gender and sexuality studies, which sounds fascinating, and received a Kinsey Institute Fellowship for Scholars of Sexology. Her book, M2WT F, delivers an intimate look at an unexpectedly hilarious moments of her gender transformation from male to female. Now, along with being a funeral director with ADHD, I'm also a gay man. It's known as a triple threat. Just because I'm gay doesn't mean I understand or know every person's journey in the LGBTQ plus community. In fact, I remember when we were all just gay. And the transgender journey is something that I'm not familiar with, so I wanted to learn more. You know, I find it important to have empathy for other people's lives and situations, even with my own community or outside of my community, and that's always been the case. I have made my jokes in the past at the cost of transgendered people and hurt feelings along the way, and I've been called on the floor for that. And so I've learned that, you know, trans lives and rights are the new battlefront in politics, because it used to always be, you know, gays, we're going to do this. Now it's transgendered people. And it's time for us to rise up and do what we can do. But with Samantha Allen's book, it's detailed enough to answer your questions. They do have a chapter on the surgery, which everyone always – that's the first thing people always want to talk about. But there's a natural curiosity. I understand that. But it's also funny enough to kind of keep you laughing in her most awkward moments, like how she describes having to go through puberty again in her 20s, which sounds awful. Poor thing. And one of the many things that I learned was that, you know, she chose to practice her vocal – to practice a vocal lesson for her speaking voice so it remained high, which is something I never really thought about. She also writes how she learned how women were treated differently than men in society, which is something that I am not surprised by at all. Anyway, it's a quick and easy book to read, and it's my cool sheet, M2WTF by Samantha Allen.
Wow, this sounds fantastic. I need to check this one out for sure. I think, how do I put this? So I've been reading a lot of books recently in the last year, and especially this year, to kind of more about people of color, you know, how to be a better ally in that aspect. But I also think this is also an important area that I just don't know enough about. I'm certainly very accepting, but no matter what, I always feel like you can learn more, be a better ally. And yeah, there's certainly things that I have said in the past that when I think back, I'm like, oh.
Oh, yeah.
And I've changed, but I'm learning every day. And things change every day. Some things that were acceptable even a year ago are not acceptable anymore. And so I'm always curious to keep evolving and getting better at this. So this sounds very interesting because the transgender world, I know people in that world, but I don't know details enough. And I feel like maybe I should. Like it's just something I need to know more about.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where you just, you know, being gay and coming out, you guys asked a lot of the same questions over and over and over again. And you really got tired of being asked, but you're also like, oh, it's good. People are curious and I need to educate people. And then you become in the forefront. But sometimes it's exhausting. So when you have something like this, you know, it had a pretty pink cover. And I thought this is something I needed to read and learn more about. And it's done in a night and it's done in a nice, simple way. It's very funny. Like I said, it's very lighthearted. And it's just something you need to be able to do. Now, I'm middle-aged, a white guy. I'm gay, but still, there's a lot of different experiences out there that, you know, easy to pass by. Because I specifically remember once we got gay rights, once we were able to get married and we were able to do a bunch of things, it was like, yahoo, cool, hey, we won. And then people were like,
done.
Well,
yeah.
Transgendered rights. And I specifically remember, oh, man, can we just wait a second? I mean, can we just hold on? We just got this.
Yeah.
Can we just celebrate here? And it's like, no, you got to keep pushing forward. We got to keep going.
Right.
And to learn of someone else's journey, coming out is very different. But then I would imagine coming out transgendered, it's something and then plus more. I mean, it's a bigger and it's a longer journey and it's a lot more for people to kind of comprehend. Because even for me, I'm like, but that's my – getting it down to the surgery part. It's not just always that. But my first thought is always, that's my favorite part of my whole body. That's my friend. That's my best friend. And so to understand when people say, after the surgery, I felt relieved. I felt free. And to me, I'm like, I don't understand that, but I appreciate, you know, your journey and how you feel. And I understand how it's to have a weight lifted off of your shoulder.
Sure.
So those things that she goes through and talks about was just like, wow, okay. And then it was really, really interesting. And she did make it really funny. She always made a joke. And sometimes you could kind of hear, because she did the audiobook, she read it herself.
Oh, good.
Sometimes you could hear that I'm peppering this with laughter, but there's some pain underneath there.
Sure.
And it hurt.
Sure.
And it was difficult because you do lose friends. You do, even in the gay community, you know, that's really tough. And if you watch the TV show like Pose, you would see how transgendered people were treated poorly, even in gay bars, because it was for gay men. What are you? You're different. You're a monster. You're this.
Wow,
and it was so eye-opening and so ashamed of that type of behavior. I never saw that personally, but I know that it existed. So always trying to learn and trying to step forward, you know, in your community, outside your community, and just trying to be empathetic to other people's journeys because you don't know other people's shoes or pumps. It ain't fun to walk in.
Yes. Well, that I'm adding that to my short list of books that I need to get. And don't forget, you can get all of our show notes on tempestus.com/tree. So that will give you all the show notes so you can find that book if you forgot already, like I have because of my memory. But don't forget 10bestest.com/treat. All right. My next cool sheet is a website. And this, so I keep picking movies. And it was kind of because you're on the show, but also because I actually just found this website. And I was surprised that I've never heard of it before and how much I enjoyed it, because it's not a new concept, but it worked really well. And it's called A Good Movie to Watch, and it's just agoodmovietowatch.com. And I don't know, I certainly have done this, where I spend more time searching for a movie to watch on Netflix, where I'm just click, nah, I don't feel like that, I don't feel like that, what's next, this, where I could have watched a film already by then. So what I like about this website is that it seems to really do a good job at curating things. So it has different sections. Of course, you can go to new, what are new movies out right now. You can also do TV shows, which I really love. So then it can go to different TV shows if you just want to check out a new series. Then it has a category for the very best. And so this is kind of the top curated. And it kind of, I think it does like a combination of Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, IMDb, and kind of and other rating systems. And like, these are the ones out of all of those, it's kind of rising to the top. Then you can go to into genres, mood, what country, language, time of release, rating, other categories that you can go to. And then you can just go, I really love this, it's just a random. So it will pick a random film that you might like. And I believe it's free to make an account. I got to imagine that once you kind of pick it on the random section, possibly, it might like, oh, since you've liked these, kind of like, you know, one thing that Netflix is really good. Oh, if you like this movie, you might like this one. And that's actually really good at. But it was just a really good movie. And so far when I've picked it, it just picks really good foreign films and, you know, movies that maybe Netflix wouldn't originally go to. It's worth checking out. A Good Movie to Watch.
Choo-choo. That sounds fascinating. I would especially go by mood, because what we just talked about earlier, when something's highly rated, you're like, yeah, here, watch Leaving Las Vegas. I'm like, I'm in the mood for a comedy. Please.
Yeah.
Can we do that? So that sounds fantastic. And I like that they're pulling, well, because I love critics. So that helps with me if it's pulling from all those different sites.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. And it's wild that I've never seen it. And I've just been, as I was playing around with it, I don't know if it just has similar taste as me. Before I even logged on, before I was like, oh, these are the movies I like or watch, it just started picking really good movies. And I like that you can pick newer ones versus all-time greats, too. So maybe what's come out in the last couple of years that's really highly rated.
Oh, that's
and
good.
And then a highly rated comedy, you know, you can get really specific. It's just been really cool.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people, myself especially, I waste a lot of time looking for a movie.
Right.
Netflix used to be really good about going, hey, you like this? Let's recommend this. Now it's like, hey, we recommend our new show. And I'm like,
Wait, what's the Netflix original?
I don't want to
find something else.
Yeah, when it recommended one of their Adam Sandler movies, I was like, no, this algorithm is broken now. Please stop doing that to me. Yeah, but that's nice to have that help, because, you can flip and go.
Yeah.
That's bad. Okay. So as I, mentioned before, being gay, I'm a middle-aged queen. So I'm very familiar with disco. And so my next cool sheet is a book, And Party Every Day, The Inside Story of Casablanca Records by Larry Harris, Kurt Gooch, and Jeff Suze. This is the true behind-the-scenes story of Casablanca Records, a successful late 70s record label, most famous for signing Kiss. Disco acts like Donna Summer and the Village People, funk acts like George Clinton and his bands. And what they did best was act like they had a lot of money and success while they were trying to stay ahead of the bill collectors. The stories are told by Larry Harris, the author there, who's the cousin of the founder named Neil Bogart. Bogart, hence Casablanca Records. And he got to see the label's huge success. We get to see the label's huge success and eventual collapse under the weight of uncontrolled ego and hype and drugs. It is a compelling tale of ambition, greed, excess, and some of the era's biggest music acts. What I love about the book was just how they would pull favors or manipulate radio and radio promotions for their acts. They offered free records or T-shirts, money, drugs. Neil Bogart would play his their newest album at a high volume in his office and would determine how big of a hit song it would be by how many people came into his office and asked, "Who's this?" And they struggled to break Kiss. They'd signed that. I'm not a big Kiss fan, but they signed them. But once the Kiss broke finally in the mainstream, then they struggled how to pay them. And then once they were able to pay them, they got to struggle to how to re-sign them. And so there was a lot of different where they talked about the author actually is really good about specific dates and times and certain radio stations, which I really enjoyed, and certain contracts and what they had to put in this contract and how they put in this one to make them happy, and then demands of the stars, and they had to try to meet. And all the while, you know, being the man behind the curtain and telling people that, yeah, we have all this money, and even when money was coming in, they were still spending more. So I mean, you can see the end. I mean, I knew the end of Casablanca Records, so it's really interesting to just see the race to the end of the finish line, or whichever one runs out first. And so, you know, when someone starts a business, they've got to go out there and they got to hustle and they got to move fast. And the problem is that even though they had success, they were still hustling and trying to outmaneuver that. So it's another fun book for my cool sheets, "And a Party Every Day: The Inside Story of Casablanca Records."
Oh, that's cool. So the music industry, man, what stories they have. Now, Bogart is related or no?
No.
Okay.
No.
Just happened to work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, because it reminds me a little bit, a former cool sheet quite a while ago to Supermensch, who he did a bunch of things, but music, I think, was the first thing that he did, and he discovered Alice Cooper was kind of his biggest name in the beginning. The stories people have in the music industry are just always a lot of drugs, good and bad. Usually starts good, ends bad, like most drug stories. And yeah, and just the wild, it was kind of the Wild West, especially, it probably still is. I don't know. The music industry is just nuts, but...
Yeah, you got to be careful.
Read about.
Yeah, but those contracts, especially the older ones, are really terrible. I mean, poor Little Richard and Chuck Berry never made the money they deserve.
Of really bad things.
But these were really interesting because then they were like, you know, Kiss was building up and they had owed them a lot of money, and they said, well, okay, then we'll just take a bigger upfront chunk here, or maybe it would be in the back end depending on how well they did. But they were constantly on the road, so it was easy to kind of avoid them because this is back in the day where it was just a phone or fax maybe, and so they were able to kind of avoid them and keep them out there. And then when they finally broke and they're like, hey, yeah, we were selling all these records. And it's like, where are we going to get the money to do this? And then
we want to re-sign them so you can't make them too upset.
Exactly. So then they have a big, huge payoff. And then they end up signing them to the new deal. And then it didn't work out. They didn't sell as well because they were anticipating to sell this much and they didn't. But because then when one person left the band, then they weren't technically Kiss anymore. So then there was a loophole. You know, sometimes when lawyers get involved, I find it really fascinating.
It is. Yeah.
I do like getting into the minutia of that. So that's really fascinating. And then they would just talk about how they had great personal relationships with all these different radio stations and they could pull favors and here's this new band and pushing it. The thing that surprised me the most and really was disappointing was how they manipulated Billboard magazine. And that was not related. Until SoundScan came in, it was totally, you know, whoever pushed the most money or whoever pushed this to be able to have the number one album. It was really just a manipulation. It had nothing to do really with popularity and or sales for the most part on a lot of those. But this one was really cool because, you know, they're struggling. I'm like, disco's around the corner, and that's when they're just going to, you know, just explode. And they had Giorgio Moroder come in, and then this little act, this young lady, Donna Summer. And it was like, here we go.
Yeah.
And so to have that take off, and they're buying big, huge.
Yeah, because you kind of know what's coming, but you're invested in this struggle.
Yeah, even though I know the ending of it, you're still rooting for them, but then they're spending, you know, the company's money on houses and cars and more drugs, and you're like, no, you're overspending. And then they get a deal with Warner Brothers for distribution, and of course then Warner Brothers is like, let me see your books.
Oh, gosh.
So then it gets really scary, and they just are constantly like, look over here, and trying to do something shady over this way. And it was really good. And I like the you know, the gentleman who read it, it was an audio book again, because I do a lot of traveling for work for my commute. And he's got a great voice and is, you know, great enthusiasm when he's telling it and stuff. So it's really easy to get hooked on.
Yeah. All right. That sounds like another winner for me, too. Thank you so much for sharing that. All right, my last cool sheet is going to be a YouTube channel, and this one is it's just a person, Michael Reeves. So he has 5.72 million subscribers, but just 46 videos, which is pretty low for someone with that many subscribers. Now, this is a younger kid. He's a software coder, kind of an engineer, but he really says he's more of a coder, even though he's always building things. So I talked about in a past episode, Simone Gertz, who I absolutely love. He's kind of like that. He makes these really wacky inventions, but he's much more cruder. He cusses a lot. And to see, he's kind of a baby face looking kid. He even jokes about how he looks like he's 14, but he's, you know, swearing and doing this crazy stuff. He loves to create inventions that either shock himself or other people, or that a lot of them have lasers. And he just, I wish he just did more videos. So he only does them every few months. I think in the last year, he only had 5 videos. But luckily, since I've just kind of discovered him, I'm having a good time seeing all of his back episodes. So one of his last one, 5 months ago, he built a laser baby. So if you've ever seen the show, which is a former Cool Sheet, The Boys, there's this baby that shoots like a baby Superman that shoots lasers. So he decided to try to see if he can make his own. So he ends up playing laser tag with his friend with this baby that shoots lasers. So not real lasers, but also funny. And in fact, his first video was a robot that shines a laser into his own eye. And he got national attention right away because he created this with a little webcam and he would bounce around and it would shoot a laser in his eye. And he's like, great, now I can't see. And so they kind of made fun of him, but it also made him viral and blew his YouTube channel up. And that's just his comedy style and why I love him so much. Check out Michael Reeves.
Choo-choo. There is no greater joy than finding a new YouTube channel.
It is. There's
so
funny. So
much fun. And it's so it's and then being able to go back, yeah, and then go back and go back and then find them and find other ones.
And see kind of the progression too of
yes.
Like I love watching every famous YouTuber, especially their first video, cuz it's you know, it's pretty amateurish, but it's their personality still, but they're still a little unsure, maybe a little nervous, and you see that, and then when you've seen current ones, how it's evolved since then, but also still the same. I love it. Yeah,
he sounds crazy. That's
he is.
So
he's
much
super
fun.
Crazy. He's constantly dropping F-bombs, and like I said, with his baby face, you just wouldn't really accept. And he trashes his fans all the time. He's like, I had, you know, he created this algorithm where he moved into a new house, and he created a bot to buy whatever got upvoted the most in Twitter. So people would suggest things for him to buy, and the bot would buy it, like automatically purchase whatever created this threshold. So he got, you know, all kinds of like dolls of certain things that he hated and certain maybe adult themed dolls and just the most ridiculous. He's like, this was the worst idea ever. I hate all you mother effer, you know, but he did it. He bought it all. And he's also like, he's joking, but he's not. And then he built this room. He had someone come in, a friend of his, and he left, and his friend built this room of a shrine to BTS, which is a K-pop band.
Oh.
And all of these, it's hilarious. But he's constantly just like, you guys, I hate you, and blah, blah, blah. But he's also, you know, of course he's making money, and that's kind of the humor of it. He's very dry, this dry, sarcastic sense of humor. And I think it's hilarious.
You know, I don't think enough people subscribe to the channels. Even when you watch them, there's a couple
it's
that
true.
We watch and that we watch we both subscribe to,
yeah.
And they're always saying, you know, hit that subscribe
yeah.
button. I knew I'd do it on our show because our show's on YouTube. But it's so satisfying because then you know it pops up. There's certain ones I know Saturday morning. They're ones I automatically get.
Right.
I know that once a month someone, you know, they'll pop up and it's like, oh, good, I forgot that, you know, da da da. And so when you have so few, which is really frustrating, but it also makes them so much more valuable when you finally.
Yeah.
Do have one, and it's a new one. And there's certain ones I'm sure you've watched several times,
right?
Several lots of times.
Yep.
And so you know, you're always looking for that next big gem that you get from them. And there's nothing worse than when there's certain channels that no longer have anymore. There's every frames of painting.
Oh,
is another
yes.
one.
So
oh,
good.
My
yes,
gosh.
I know. And then I'm always afraid that they're going to go away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he did this one, the building a laser baby, 5 months ago, but it had 9.4 million views because everybody was like, finally a new a video. And so they did a 9.4 million is crazy. Of course, he timed it to the finale of The Boys or whatever, you know, and super smart. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to do something like that, but I love when people are. They're like, oh, this is the theme because this is coming out. I'm like, oh, I didn't think of doing that.
Genius.
That's pretty good. Smart.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, I look forward to that one.
I think you'll like it. I think it would fit your personality and things that, you know,
we do this several times when we send each other YouTube clips.
Yeah.
Check out this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So we'll move on to my final cool sheet, which all mine's kind of tie in. This is a 70s American band, Fanny, who were actually at one point in time signed to Casablanca Records late in their career for their last album. The band consisted of Jean Millington, who played bass guitar, June Millington, her sister, who played guitar, Nikki Barclay, keyboards, and Alice DeBoer on drums, an amazing drummer. And then Millings and Barclay all assumed lead vocal duties. They signed with Reprise Records in 1970 and released five albums, Fanny in 70, Charity Ball in 71, Fanny Hill in 72, which were produced by Richard Perry, a big-time producer who helped discover them. Mother's Pride in 73 and Rock and Roll Survivors in 74 for Casablanca. These were produced by Todd Rundgren. Really cool, a really cool producer and sound of the 70s. Their sound, I would kind of describe it as kind of a boogie pop rock and roll, is very easy to get into. And their musicianship allowed them to cover anything from Cream to Marvin Gaye. I love this band. And they had a couple of hits. In a Peculiar reached number 85. And then Butterboy was written about David Bowie, who was a big fan of the group, and became their biggest hit by hitting number 29 in 75. There are some videos of their performances on YouTube, Blind Alley and Special Care, I would recommend. Fun facts is that Fanny was discovered at an open mic by the secretary of Richard Perry and referred him to them. The band's name is recommended by George Harrison. I'm not going to explain what slang term that is in England, which is really funny that he would recommend that. They were the session band for Barbara Streisand's Barbara Jones Streisand album, which I have to mention because, you know, before I mentioned I'm gay. It's a band that just didn't hit, and it's a real shame because people don't know their music. They get listed with like Mott the Hoople or perhaps Detroit, bands that people never heard of. As you notice by the names of the band, by the names of the members, that is, their gimmick was they were the first all-female band signed by a major record label. But the fact that there are women is not a factor. This is just a really, really cool band. It's a band of great talent. Every one of the musicians is solid and holds their own without competing against one another like everyone's playing a solo, like in Cream or Living Color, two bands I really enjoy. So I thought I would make this a mention on my cool sheet.
Yeah, no, I'm so... Why do I not... Does that not strike... Have I heard Fanny? I got to check them out.
Yeah.
I don't think I've heard them.
And again...
Or it could be that one where I heard the song and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I know this one.
If their song was on a Quentin Tarantino soundtrack, it would have totally fit in. If it was on Days of Confused, it would have totally fit in. And I thought for sure, since I talked about some chemistry, I'd want to talk about a band, especially with a really kick-ass band with all female band members. Maybe Karen would enjoy that as well.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised if she's heard of them. And if she hasn't, she's going to love me because this band is awesome.
They sound great.
Albums that they have, I'm trying not to burn through. So I listened to all of them and I really enjoyed it. But right now I just have the one album on my phone because I download them, and just have the first album. I'm listening to it when I'm walking the dog and I'm doing things around the house.
Oh,
and
cool.
I just love this band. It's so easy to get into. They just falls into place. It's a great band.
Oh man, that's so cool. I cannot wait to check them out.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. This is great. So many new cool sheets that you shared that I probably never would have discovered. So I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan.
Well, that's great. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do that?
So Real Film Snobs, that's R-E-E-L, filmsnobs.com. You can certainly check out our website. We're on YouTube. We're on local radio here in KMUZ, also on CCTV in Salem, also in SCAN, in Corvallis. We're also in Silverton, a little bit here, there, and everywhere. Right now, I'm on a hiatus from the show, but Angela, my co-host, has been having several different guest hosts, which are just as entertaining. I'm talking about films. It's a little hard right now with COVID and everything, but there's still films out there to try to, you know, to search for and look for. And of course, everyone's using all kinds of streaming services, so it helps guide as well.
Perfect. And yes, so don't forget, you can also get all of our show notes, including all those links to everything that Brian just mentioned, so you can find out more about him and check out Real Film Snobs, which is former cool sheet as well, at 10bestus.com/tree. That's 10bestus.com/tree. And thanks, everyone. Stay curious.
Want to learn more about this week's cool sheets?
Head on over to 10bestest, that's 10bestest.com, for links to all of our cool sheets.
And sign up for our monthly newsletter with bonus cool sheets and other fun stuff.
10 Bestest will be back with an all-new episode next Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern.